Jeremy Wu of Sports Illustrated joins me for this episode. I ask him about covering the draft for the much, much wider and somewhat different kind of audience than I have here on Ode to Odin, obviously. And then we get into his evaluation style and his top 10. We talk about Fox and Ball mostly, and a little bit of Derek White. This podcast is part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, which is getting more and more draft-centric. Right now, obviously, it's that time of year, so subscribe to the general Almighty Baller feed if you don't already for draft coverage. Obviously, What's on Draft is pumping out a lot of really, really good content. Their last episode on Philly's decision was really, really interesting. I am Sean Darenthal, your host, and you are listening to Ode to Odin, the NBA Draft Podcast. Hey, Jeremy, thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. How's it going?
I'm good. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm happy to stop by.
Cool. Well, it's interesting that I started this podcast mostly because I thought that there was something not out there kind of like it. And I don't know if I, you know, met the goal of having just kind of more in-depth draft content or not. I'm not it'll be up to the listener to decide if I did or not. And now there are several other draft podcasts that I think are actually better than mine. But but it's interesting that I've never had on like super, super high profile guys, or at least somebody who writes for a really, really high profile publication like you. I guess I probably should have done this in the introduction, speaks to kind of the professional level here, but Jeremy Wu is with me, who writes for Sports Illustrated. And I guess the reason that I haven't had anybody on that's high profile, well, one, maybe I guess they wouldn't come on, but I think more so I haven't pursued that route just because I don't know whether they're like good at this kind of content or not. Like, I'm sure that they're really smart guys and they probably are, but I don't know because the content they put out on these kind of larger outlets is usually a little more dumbed down, like a little more, not dumbed down. I shouldn't say that. I don't want to insult anybody because I read it all and I like it all, but it's a little more tailored toward like the mainstream, let's say. And so I was just wondering, from your perspective, writing for Sports Illustrated, what is the directive that you get when covering the draft? Because I guess I should say I decided to have you on after reading a few of your pieces, really liking them, and then listening to you on what Andrew Sharp's and Ben Golliver's podcast. I'm blank on the name, Open mm-hmm. Floor, whatever it is.
Yeah, Open Floor. Go download it right now.
And you were so good on that. I thought you gave so much substance in such a short time on a platform that's often. Like Andrew Sharp and Ben, right? They're just like funny guys and they have like, they're smart. I'm not saying they're not smart. That's not the point. But, you know, it's mostly about like the entertainment value that they provide. And you were just so good and concise, like tons of substance. Like everything you said had a really good reason to it. A lot of these guys don't like have, you know what I mean? They don't have a ton of great reasons why, but you backed up all of your opinions with like really solid reasoning. And so I'm excited to have you on. And so I wanted to know, what is the directive from Sports Illustrated or other larger mainstream media outlets when covering the draft?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, I can't really speak for, you know, any other outlets, but I guess for, you know, I'm lucky at SI. I do have a lot of freedom, I think, generally in the way we cover it. And, you know, we do, you know, it's tricky because, you know, we're obviously very all in on the playoffs a lot of the time. So draft coverage, you know, the key is just to not let it fall by the wayside. So, we try to figure out ways to sort of get it in here and there and, you know, balance it the best way possible. But, you know, I mean, we do, you know, the basic, you know, the big boards, the mock drafts and that type of stuff. And, you know, Sharp and I do, you know, the mock drafts. He does most of them and I do the, you know, the big boards and the. I've done a sort of a series of pieces on sleepers. There's another one going up on Wednesday this week between guards. But yeah, no, I'm lucky. I actually have a lot of freedom, I think, in the way that we do it. And over the next week or so, you know, going into the draft, we'll roll out a little bit more in terms of, you know, rankings or whatever it is, you know, different types of a little bit more in-depth type stuff. But, you know, what you did say about, you know, dumbing it down or whatever, I think there is a balance you have to strike. And it's tricky. Yeah. I don't like SI or whoever, you know, whoever you are. You know, a lot of guys do a really good job, but it's tricky to know who's reading it. You know, because sometimes you have people who are, you know, really into the draft and, you know, want the full, you know, breakdown. And some people just want to know, like, who is this guy? What are his, like, three best things? And, like, does my team, you know, how would he fit with my team? You know,
right.
So
yeah.
I think it's just trying to strike that balance is the challenge.
So how do you do that? How do you, because it seems like your stuff is different. Like, obviously, you know, I've had you on for a reason. Had, what's your approach? Do you think that fans of this stuff, and maybe it's just my little corner of Twitter, but it seems like people want more of this stuff. Like, media, sports media especially, is trending kind of in a smarter direction, or maybe at least just more like detail-oriented, substance-filled material. Is that true, or is that just kind of my little corner?
I don't know. I mean, I think there definitely is maybe a little bit more push for it, at least because, like, you know, you see basketball Twitter, as you know, everyone will call it. I mean, I think it's a very, you know, specific group of people. Sometimes it can be insular. But I do think there is demand, and I think it has sort of increased the interest in maybe a little bit more detailed type stuff than you would, at least maybe in the past, have seen. I think that's fair to say.
Do you think that the draft coverage or the draft stuff, the content that you guys are pumping out, is it getting more clicks this year? Is this year, I don't know, for some reason to me, this year seems like people care a little bit more. Maybe it's just this 2017 draft class is interesting. I don't know. Have you guys seen an uptick in clicks or anything like that, traffic?
I honestly have no idea. I have some read on how it does. I can tell you that, you know, draft stuff tends to do well every year, no matter what it is. People, you know, love reading.
Really?
You know, big boards and rankings. It always seems to do well, you know, for most sites. But I don't know any specifics, really, when it comes to, you know, this year versus last year. I couldn't say with any authority.
All right, cool. Well, like I said, you're unique, so I got those questions out of the way. I've always been curious about, like, how it works behind the scenes at the bigger outlets. So let's get into kind of just your evaluation style. What are some of the things that you value a lot? Like, well, first of all, how do you go about it? I assume, you know, you just DVR as many games as you can, you know, YouTube some of these European games or whatever. But once you are watching them, what are some of the attributes that you kind of care more about, you know, other than just kind of the common talked about themes?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think the best piece of advice I got, and you know, like, I think a big sort of advantage of this job is, you know, being able to, you know, get to know people around the league and try to talk to people who are smarter than you. Like, I think that's one thing that I've always tried to do is, like, you know, get to know different types of people and sort of get other people's opinions to sort of, you know, and sort of get a basis for, you know, what I might think. And the best piece of advice I got was to try to, like, you know, there's a lot of smoke and different stuff that comes out during right. the run up to the draft. And it's like, try to, you know, form your own opinions. And so that's sort of what I try to do. I try to not, you know, I'll read other draft sites. You know, there are a lot of guys who do a really good job. You know, I don't see it as like a crazy competition or anything. You know, I think it's all pretty fun to read and think about. But I mean, some of the things that, I mean, so that's one thing. I mean, I try to look at the whole picture. I mean, it's tough in a vacuum because in real life, it's not always like you can't just rank straight, you know, the 50 best players, because it's relative, you know, depending on what team it is and, you know, where you are in the draft, you know, so like all those things are relative. So I think the best thing that I think is just sort of I just sort of look at, I mean, there's a lot of gut feel that goes with it, but it's just like the whole package. You know, I watch a lot of games. I have this running really long document on my phone where I, you know, have like moving rankings and whatever, like depending on bits and pieces of things that I, you know, I think about during the day. It's just like, it's sort of an ongoing process, I guess. It's hard to like really like hit it on the head, I guess, necessarily with the hammer. It's not, you know, but it's sort of an ongoing thing that I'm always sort of, you know, talking to people and watching and reading and thinking about stuff.
Well, I'm impressed by you because if you go on Sports Illustrated and you just search your name or like Google you and Sports Illustrated, whatever it is, there's like a ton of different articles that come up, obviously with your byline, and it's like soccer, baseball, this, that, and the other thing. And I don't know how you have such substantive takes on the draft that seem to resonate so well, but then also be doing all these other things. So I imagine there's a lot on your plate. But one question that I have about interacting with scouts, and maybe you'll know, maybe you don't. Obviously, you're not like Woj breaking stuff.
Right. That's I never try to be.
right. But why do scouts even talk to the media? Like, what is the advantage that they gain? It seems like they're usually in some kind of interaction, there's some like trade-off. Is it just they kind of get to feel cool, like letting somebody else in on their opinion? Or is it just like, hey, I'm a nice guy, I'll just share this because it's fun to talk to you guys about this? Like, why would they share information with us?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I mean, I think the bottom line is there are a lot of really nice people around the league and around basketball. Like, from my experience, I haven't done this for a while, and you know, meeting different people. I mean, most people, I think, want to help you. You know, you can kind of tell some teams and some people are, you know, tougher with the media. But, you know, I mean, it's not always, you know, GMs or whatever. And, you know, certain reporters, I think, are able to sort of broker the information to where, you know, scouts will give them bits and pieces and, you know, people can, you know, give relay information back. It's sort of like that's sort of how information travels, I think, around the league. You know, I think in some cases reporters are sort of can be conduits for that. So I think that's, you know, I don't want to speculate on how people do their jobs, but I think that is part of it, to where, you know, you can trade and swap information and people owe each other favors, blah, blah, blah. So I think that's part of it. And that's how you sort of get these bits and pieces, to sort of, in, you know, you see those more formulated opinions. But I mean, I'm not like, you know, I'm not Woj. I'm not, you know, I don't know every single team. I don't have them all on my phone, but you know, the people that I do know have been really, really, you know, great to me and helpful. I think, I think that, you know, a lot of people who work for NBA teams respect, you know, guys who work hard and, you know, are thoughtful. And I think that, you know, it kind of gets paid forward a little bit.
Yeah, that's cool. I would imagine it would be difficult to talk to somebody who, yeah, writes, a certain style of stuff. Whereas, like, your stuff, I imagine it would garner a little bit of, like, respect at least, right? And there,
I hope so.
yeah, cool. Okay, so, how do you think about upside? That's one of the topics that's been kind of big right now in my little Twitter sphere of draft Knicks. Everybody's talking about, well, like it used to be, right, that BPA was the draft philosophy only, right? And stats nerds would tell you, of course, best player available, you always just take the best player available, like they have the highest value, you know, blah, blah, later you can trade them, blah, all this stuff. And right now, it seems like that's kind of shifting. Maybe it's like the Jahlil Okafor syndrome, something like that. And I've talked about this before on several other podcasts, but I'd like to get your kind of take on this. What is your kind of philosophy when you're thinking about ranking these guys and you're thinking about just upside in general, and you're thinking about fit and all of the other things that kind of come in besides just drafting somebody for their like mean expected outcome?
Yeah, sure.
How do you kind of factor in all this stuff? Because there's like, you know, there's like Doug McDermott versus like Zach LaVine, you know, obviously that right. It's difficult to talk about these guys and project them in the future. Nobody has a crystal ball, but you know, we still have to like look at athleticism and say that it counts for something, even if there's some like underdeveloped value there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it is, upside. I mean, in terms of the draft, I think it's relative to draft slot a lot of the time. You know, it's sort of a risk reward assessment. I think like if I'm ranking a big board, for example, you know, I'm not a team. I don't know who I'd be picking for. So for me, it's more of like if I'm putting a guy a spot ahead of another guy, you know, sometimes it's just a toss up and it's a gut thing that dictates one spot. But, you know, I mean, in terms of wider gaps between players,
yeah.
You know, a lot of it's just like, you know, figuring out, you know, what is his best case? What is his worst case? What is his most likely, you know, outcome, I guess.
Yeah.
And again, that's all, you know, it's tricky. And it's, I mean, the thing about the draft also is like, no one really knows, like even people who, even general managers are still, a lot of it's guesswork and it's trying to make the most educated guess, I think. It's, you know, no one really knows. But yeah, I think it's just trying to gauge, you know, where you think this guy will, come out. Like, for example, if you have two guys in the top 10, it's like, say I'm talking about Dennis Smith and Malik Monk. Well, you know, it's like, you know, maybe one of them has, you know, you think has a higher upside than the other one, but maybe another one, the other one has, you know, more like perceptible, you know, path to, you know, having success. You know, it's like, it's a whole, I think, risk reward thing for me. That's what I think about a lot of the time. Cause I, you know, upside, it's tricky because I feel like it's a term that's overused a little bit in draft.
Yeah.
Like upside and potential. Like, so, honestly, like I sometimes will write some stuff and like command F my column and like make sure I didn't use it too many times. Cause it's like, I hate repeating it so much.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, it's just become sort of a buzzword to express an idea and there's not really a better word for it, but you hear it thrown around a lot and like it becomes kind of a draft cliche, I think, sometimes.
Yeah,
but
I totally agree.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Like that's, yeah, that's why I asked this question, just because it is so tricky. It's a broad topic, obviously. One word is definitely not enough to do it justice. So why don't we put some context to this? Go over your top five, actually top 10 guys that you have right now, either on your board or if you want to do it like mock draft style, that's fine too, because then we can kind of start picking apart this upside stuff. Because at Philly, I imagine, you know, there's like an upside question that comes in there. And then wherever you have Lauri Markkanen, if you even have him in the top 10, you know, obviously he's a good test case for this topic. So why don't you give us your top 10 guys in big board or mock draft form, whatever you want to do, factoring in fit or not. And then we'll kind of just talk about it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, what I'll do is I'll just run down the list that I was talking about that I have just the sort of this is, as I have it right now. Okay. I think it's the same as was on our most recent board that went up last week. So I have Fultz at one. Do you want me to just sort of explain it, or do you want me to just sort of run down?
Yeah, just do a rundown real quick.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, I have Fultz first. I think he is, for a while, I thought he's probably the safest player. I think people have sort of settled on him as the top prospect. I think there are guys who could be better than him, but I think he is probably the best combination of, like, you know, some safety and also the athleticism and skills that sort of lend themselves to think that he'll get to a certain point where he's worth that. I have De'Aaron Fox second, who is growing on me a lot over the course of the draft process. This is not, you know, not something people all agree on. I'm not that worried about his jump shot. I think he just needs to be a passable shooter, and I don't think his shot's broken. But I like, you know, his defense. I like his athleticism. I like his just his makeup in general. You know, a lot of these kids, I've had the, you know, ability to see them, you know, play in high school. So that's also another thing I didn't mention is, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, a player, I try to think about over the last few years, like, what is the arc that I've sort of seen them go on? Because, you know, I started out doing this sort of scouting high school, how many years ago, like 6 or 7 years ago. And it kind of, you know, eventually grew. Well, now some of these guys are in the NBA. And now, you know, a lot of these guys I've seen when they were, you know, 16 or 17, which is really valuable to me. Anyway, so then I have Tatum third, just because I think that it's pretty clear, like, what he can be. I think he will get to a certain point where he has value. I guess the question with Tatum is, you know, will he, you know, become a better defender, you know? And if he doesn't, then what, how much value does a guy like that have who's a score first wing? But then I have Jackson fourth, who I think he's close with Tatum, but his shooting worries me. Some of the off-court stuff worries me a little bit. I don't like to ever, you know, bash guys too much based on that, because it's still not something I know the whole situation about. But I have Lonzo Ball fifth, which is something that is just sort of my opinion. I've just never been, like, extremely high on him. I see why some would be, and I don't think they're wrong necessarily. That's just my opinion. We can talk about it later if you want. I have Jonathan Isaac sixth, who I've gotten a little bit higher on over the last couple of weeks, because I think that he, you know, if you think about him more as like a center who is, you know, from watching the finals, you saw the way Durant played center. If you think of Isaac as like a diet Kevin Durant in that sense, where he can kind of be a positionless center and kind of do center things, but also enable you to kind of play wide open. If that's his best case, then I think it's, you know, pretty good. I don't know if he gets there, but I have him sixth. And then I have Dennis Smith seventh, Malik Monk eighth. At nine, I have Zach Collins. And at 10, I have Frank Ntilikina. And then Markkanen is 11. Markkanen and Ntilikina, I'm kind of back and forth on there. But that's sort of the top 10 or 11. And I think that is sort of what consensus has sort of come to be as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's start with Fox at two. So I'm gonna give you my favorite anecdotal piece of evidence, like negative evidence for Fox, because I actually have Fox in like a tier like 11 through 15. I think there are a lot of very good reasons that we could kind of talk about, and of course usually that's what my podcast is about. But since we don't have as much time, let me just give you like my favorite kind of anecdotal argument. I think that the best point guard who can't shoot is, like, best case scenario is Ricky Rubio, right? Very, very good defender, because of his anticipation, kind of underrated strength there as well. Obviously, his, like, offensive plus minus stuff is really, really good on that team. One, because they don't have a lot of people who understand offensive sets that well, and he's such a good passer and understands things so well that even though defensive sag off of him like incredibly well, like, you know, to an insane degree relative to other point guards in the NBA, he's still so effective at opening up those passing lanes because people you know are so scared of certain things that you'll even see people make mistakes and like go over screens to like try to clamp down on passing lanes and that kind of thing, which is so interesting to me. It seems a bit crazy, but very interesting. So like that's, and I think Ricky Rubio is a good player. I think there have been seasons where he was like an above average point guard in the NBA. And I think that that is kind of like the best case scenario for Fox, except for he has none of those kind of anticipation, like feel for the game stuff that Rubio has. Like he's definitely not the passer that Rubio is. He definitely doesn't think the game how Rubio does. And defensively, you know, he gives a lot of effort and he's quick, but he lacks the strength to really make anybody pay for like driving against him, even when he can get in front of him. And he doesn't have the kind of anticipation. Like he gets blown by like way more than you think for somebody with that kind of defensive reputation coming in. So, that is my like argument against Fox, but you like, so what is your best case against kind of like my
yeah, sure. Well, I think it really comes down to just whether you think he can shoot or not. And I think he can. I think he looks pretty confident shooting the ball. I don't think it's broken. You know, I looked at, you know, I watched some of his, you know, synergy footage and whatnot. I just sort of talked myself into him not being a non-shooter, which I think might be enough because I think he is good enough at a lot of other things. You know, he's really young. I mean, you know, the strength thing I think is fair. Someone else actually raised that to me, like, I think last week. But, I mean, he's, like, 19. You know, I feel like he can get stronger. He's so rangy and so quick. And, I mean, I remember part of it is I remember seeing him a couple years ago in high school and just, like, being wowed by, you know, his just, like, I think he is does have good anticipation in terms of passing lanes. And, you know, he's pretty quick and long. And, I mean, we never know how much is going to translate to the NBA. But I mean, basically, I think he will be able to defend, and I think he'll be able to knock down some shots. And I think that if you're as, you know, athletic and quick as you know, I think he is, I don't think you need to necessarily be, you don't need, I mean, what if he shoots, if he can shoot 30 to 34% in three or whatever, I mean, I think that's probably enough to keep people honest. Like you can, I don't think he's John Wall good, but you can point to John Wall as another guy who's, you know, he's a different level of athlete, but who was not a shooter, became a passable shooter and has had success. And I mean, really just the track record, I think, you know, with all these Kentucky guys, I mean, you know, you've seen the full range, like Brandon Knight was not as good as, you know, some of these other guys have been, but I mean, I think Fox can be, you know, one of the better guys in that group, if it all comes together.
Yeah. I think you're right. There are some points you made like about the shot that it's not broken. They're like his pre-college statistics like aren't that bad. The one thing that really bothers me is it felt a lot like watching Ben Simmons where, you know, he was just so hesitant to take certain shots and it was so obvious. It's usually not as obvious. Like they can make, you know, certain plays or quick passes or attack in certain ways. But Fox often, especially when the defense would go under all the screens, he really, really hesitated, and there were a few times where he got kind of stuck and kind of thrown out of his rhythm, and it would affect kind of his passing and stuff. And so I just wonder if he thinks he's a good shooter, and now we're playing like armchair psychology. And,
right.
And look, I don't know if that's true or not. This is like an anecdotal thing, and maybe like that's one of the arguments that maybe I could stand to hear that he might be a good shooter. But anyway, we can move off of him. We don't have like much time at all. We have a couple more minutes. So let me just get to Lonzo Ball. I personally have him in like my second tier, like 2 through 4. I'm fine if any of those teams there take him. So what are kind of your biggest concerns that bring Ball down for you? What, around, you have him at 6, right?
I have him at 5.
5. Okay.
Yeah. And like, look, I won't be like, why did the Lakers do that if they take him, you know, 'cause I get it.
Yeah.
But I think for Ball, I'm concerned sort of in the same way that I think a lot of people are, just about his ability to create his own shot. Because, you know, like you're saying with Fox, in terms of like, can you be a great point guard and not be able to shoot? Well, I don't know if you can be a great point guard and not be able to create space and score when you need to. If you look around the league, you know, it's a wide open game and people are saying, you know, I mean, that'll benefit Ball to some degree with more space to operate. And he's tough to peg because he's so... he's so unique just in terms of his tendencies and traits are different. A lot of people, you know, the ball doesn't stick with him. I think he can probably play a little bit of shooting guard. And, you know, when you think of him as like a guy who could be your second best player, I mean, I think that's really, I mean, he could be a really, really, really good second best player with the right, you know, guy alongside him. I don't know if he's the guy who can carry your team though, because I just don't know if he can score enough. But you know, I'm not that worried about his, I know his shot's weird. Doesn't really bother me that much, but it just, what bothers me more is like, how is he going to get to it? Because really, the only way he consistently does that, from what I've you know watched, is mostly like step backs, and teams are going to anticipate that. And like, what is he going to do when you know there's a guy in his grill, you know, late in the game? I don't know if he can. He's going to have to defer, you know. So I don't know. I have a lot of concerns just with him creating his own offense to where it doesn't let him do enough to help other people as it could. You know, he'll be good in transition. He'll be able to hit spot up shots when he's open. You know, you're going to have to at least account for him. And I think he's a top five pick, but I don't know if I would take him like at two or one.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that kind of speaks to a problem with fans. And I don't know, maybe you can say if it's a problem also in front offices or like in the media at large. But it seems like expectations for like top five picks are just always overblown, right? Like if you're drafting someone that's not number one, like two through five, you're looking for somebody who's like maybe the third best player on the championship team. Like you're looking for like a good starter, right? Like an above average starter in the league. Like that is the actual expectation. Turns out right. There are only like a couple guys usually in every draft who are like all-star level guys. And maybe one of those guys is like the franchise changer that we talk about, right? That like maybe will be in a top three of like an MVP voting during his career. Like these guys are super, super rare. So I completely agree with you. I think Lonzo Ball is he has like the widest range of outcomes, and he's so, like you said, he's so unique that it's difficult without a ton of precedent to like really, really peg, you know, him into an archetype that's really successful right now, because frankly there isn't one, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I guess you can make a few arguments one way or the other, but he's so different from any of the stupid comps that people like to lay at his feet. So all right, let's move off this and just get one quick hitter really, really quick. Who's somebody outside of this top 10 that you really like that you think isn't being talked up enough? And it could be second round. It can be wherever you want.
Sure. Let's see. Well, I think one guy who I really like is Derek White, who from Colorado, who I kind of got on early in the season and have been like continually impressed by. I really, really like him a lot. I think teams have sort of come around to him too. You know, he was probably the best player at Portsmouth. I wasn't there, but that was what I heard. And he was.
I can't imagine you watching a lot of Portsmouth film.
I wish I had been there, honestly. But you know, he was. I was at the combine, and he was one of the best players at the combine. You know, I think he is a guy who can probably come in and do some stuff and help right away, and like play a little bit of both guard spots. You know, I think it matters less if a guy is really a point guard or not, but he can, you know, play a little point, play a little bit. He's gonna have to learn how to play off the ball. But he's a really good defender, a really good athlete, and you know, he's got an interesting story. And he's a guy who I think may not make it out of the first round, based on like the vibe right now. Mm-hmm. But and he's a guy who I like, who I've been sort of high on. We'll see what happens to him.
So you would take him like?
I would take him 25 to 30. I think that's might be where he goes. He won't step that much further than that. Like I'm curious, like him or Frank Jackson, for example, like who's gonna get taken first? Like it still depends on which team you are.
That's cool. I think he is super interesting. The other guy you bring up, Frank Jackson, is somebody who I've been watching a lot lately for an upcoming pod that I'm going to do. And yeah, he's also really interesting. I think somebody underrated. All right, Jeremy, thank you so much for coming on. Can you tell us where we can find you? Like, what's the easiest way to follow you? Give us your Twitter handle, anything you want to plug.
Yeah, of course. You know, Twitter is fine. It's just my name at Jeremy Wu. I used to have the underscore, but I was able to drop it. So it's just my name. And
cool.
You know, I appreciate that. I appreciate you having me on.
Of course.
And yeah, you know, we'll see. It's going to be an interesting next, I guess, 9 days now until the draft. That's crazy, huh?
Yeah.
I guess it's Tuesday, so.
It's eight, insane. Nine.
Yeah.
It's insane how close it is. All right, man. Thanks for coming on. Hopefully we can do this again.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, let me know anytime.
All right. See ya.